Good morning. Welcome to hour number two, Focus 580. This is our morning talk show. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Henry Frayne is at the controls. Today is likely to be the hottest day of the year so far. We have had some warm weather already, and you know we're going to have more. We still got to do July and August. It can even be pretty warm once we get into September. So you may well be thinking about what you can do for your home to try to keep cool, keep as comfortable as possible, and try to keep the bills down. And to that end, we have here in studio with us a guest who's been here before a number of times. His name is Larry Lister. He is an energy expert. He's an engineer. And his main focus in his work is energy efficiency in both design and construction and operation of buildings, all of those things. And in his professional work, he works with very big buildings. But when he's here on the program, we talk a little bit about things on the smaller scale, sort of on the residential scale, and give people the opportunity to ask some basic questions about things they can do to save money as they're trying to either keep cool or keep warm, whichever time of the year we're talking about. Larry has been with the firm of Facility Dynamics for a number of years now. Before that, he spent 15 years working at the U.S. Army Construction Engineering Research Lab. He's been a consultant to Argonne National Lab, the Department of Energy, the World Bank. He served as an adjunct faculty member to the Department of Mechanical Engineering at the U of I. We're pleased to have him here once again. Questions welcome, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Is it really that much different to you say you're dealing with a large office building or a house? Is it just a matter of scale, or is there something that's actually dramatically different about a big building like that?
It's pretty dramatically different, actually. The types of systems and things. I mean, cooling's heating, and heating is heating. But most large things that I tend to deal with are cooling all year long, even in the winter. They're doing cooling because there's so much internal load. There's lights and people and equipment and all kinds of things. So generally, yeah, it's considerably different. The type of equipment's fairly different, at least at the detail I have to worry about.
And probably a lot of those buildings don't have windows that open, so opening windows is not an issue.
You know, yeah, a lot of those buildings don't. And anything built from about the 60s through maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago, we just built these hermetically sealed buildings and sealed in all the everything, garbage, and our own breath and stuff. And lately, with the advent of these green building, the new green building technologies, as they call them, which are really, in a lot of cases, happily anti-technologies, they're saying, hey, you know, we can make this window open.
People what are a thinking, revolutionary concept.
Wow, yeah, that's too cool. Let's do that.
Air from the outside?
Yeah, yeah. And so they're actually, more and more, they're building buildings with operable windows. I'm working on a really large federal courthouse that's being put in in downtown San Francisco right now. And one of the big revolutionary things, it's supposed to be one of the show plate energy efficient large commercial buildings. And in San Francisco, it's a really mild climate year-round for the most part. And they've got, this is a 12-story building, and they've got operable windows the whole way.
Wow.
So people can open their windows. And actually, the control systems, which control these buildings, will open the windows for you if it's deemed that what you want in your office it can be had outside. It will actually crack this window. Now, it doesn't open them wide up so you can leap out the building, but it cracks them open enough that disables the mechanical conditioning and allows you to.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really pretty.
And that doesn't. I would think that would, particularly in a big building, it would create you potential problems with your indoor humidity because you open the. Not only are you letting in fresh air, but you may also be letting in a lot of moisture.
It can, and in some climates, it's a bigger issue. And in the southeast United States and the mid Atlantic areas, the DC areas and stuff, the federal government are doing a lot of these new buildings, but they're doing operable windows, and so there has to be. Within the control systems that run these buildings, they put something in the window that as soon as you crack open the window, it tells the local cooling system, which is a variable air volume box that's up in the ceiling, says, hey, the window's open, and this box just says, okay, I'm shutting off. You're on your own. And it kind of takes that piece of the puzzle out of the picture.
Let's talk with some folks here. We got a caller on the campus. We'll start with them. Line one. Hello.
Hi. I was wondering if there's someone in town that does energy audits of houses and about how much that costs.
Oh, boy. There's a good one. I heard this one the other day. I think it might be the same caller.
No.
But, yeah. I don't know if anybody, when Hank was on, he got a call with a similar question, and I kind of would have said the same thing. He recommended people to the U of I Small Homes Council.
Okay.
That said, a lot of probably what I'll be dealing with on this show would give you a lot of the things that you might look at toward an energy audit. Is there anything specifically that you're...
Well, I know that I need to replace my heating and air, but I can't afford that just yet. I do have a 20-year-old refrigerator, and I don't know if that would make a huge dent that would justify its cost or not.
Yes.
It would?
Yeah, I'll tell you that one right off the bat.
Okay.
And it's free, by the way.
No charge for that.
Yeah. You can donate to WILL if you want. I know they're in the last gasps of getting to the end of the year here, so I'll put a plug in for them. But yes, definitely, and the reasons, there's a lot of reasons for that, one being that a new refrigerator will save you a lot of money, and you will see it in your electric bill. The other issue is that if you do mechanical cooling in the summer, and not everybody does, I mean, a lot of us, I only turn my air conditioning on 10 days out of the year, maybe. That's just a personal preference.
Yeah.
Some people start cooling in April and quit in October.
I try to keep it to the really humid days.
Yeah, but anybody that does mechanical cooling, your refrigerator, and this is something I was hoping to talk about during the hour about how to stay cool. Your refrigerator dumps heat into your house.
Yeah,
and a 20-year-old refrigerator dumps a more substantial amount of heat into your house than a 2-year-old or 1-year-old refrigerator does.
Okay. Well, that's useful.
So those, and there's other sources of heat that we use in our house that we can try to put off till the later part of the day. Dishwashers are big because of the heat and humidity.
What about my house is about 30 years old and it has that kind of fluffy insulation in the outer walls, and I was wondering if there is much advantage in replacing that or adding something else to it.
Depends on what specifically what kind of insulation you have. It's probably like a rock wool or some sort of.
It's yellow, I think.
Yeah, it's insulation that was sort of poured into the wall cavities.
I think it's like pads.
Oh, okay. So if it's fiberglass bat, if it's not a loose fill thing, there's really not much more you can. If it were redone, if you were tearing the walls out,
uh-huh.
You could do a lot better job of what's probably there. But as far as a retrofit thing, it's really difficult. If there's already something in there, it's difficult to add more insulation. But there's usually a lot of things like on tightening up that you can do. A lot of people stress windows. I'm going to go replace all my windows, and that's going to help my energy efficiency. And the window providers would love to stress that.
Yeah.
I respectfully sort of disagree with a lot of their numbers. I'm not saying that it doesn't help, but it's not going to really make a huge difference.
Yeah, I did that about 2 years ago because my windows were horrible anyway. And
there's the good reason to do it.
It did not make a huge difference.
Yeah, it doesn't. And I'm constantly getting complaints from people that say, I had these, they told me it was going to save this much money and I haven't seen the savings. And then they'll call and I'll say, well, sorry. Did you get good windows? Yeah, I like my windows. Okay, well,
yeah, I love my windows.
Yeah, that's the main reason to do it. And I think, one of the issues is that if you can open your windows and you're prone to wanting to do that when the conditions are nice outside, when it's dry, when it's cool,
yeah,
and you're pretty good about that and your house does allows itself to air out, that's another good reason for having windows. A lot of old windows are can't be opened for one reason or another.
Okay, well, I guess a new refrigerator is in my future then.
Yeah, definitely, and you'll enjoy that too.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks for the call. Just before we go any further here, I have some weather information I want to pass along. Ed Kieser just came in studio and handed me this. The Storm Prediction Center has issued a severe thunderstorm watch for all of northern Illinois and also parts of northwestern Indiana that will be in effect this morning and afternoon until 6 Central Time. Hail to 2 inches in diameter, thunderstorm wind gusts to 80 miles an hour, and dangerous lightning are possible in these areas. And in our immediate AM 580 severe weather coverage area, the severe thunderstorm watch includes the following counties in Illinois: Ford, Iroquois, Livingston, and McLean. So do remember that a severe thunderstorm watch means conditions are favorable for severe thunderstorms in and close to the watch area. Keep an eye on the sky for threatening weather conditions, and of course stay tuned to AM 580 for the latest weather information and possible warnings. Severe thunderstorms can and occasionally do produce tornadoes, so keep that in mind. Again, that's a severe thunderstorm watch in effect for all of northern Illinois and parts of northwestern Indiana until 6 p.m. Central Time, and we will have more on the weather for you later on as part of the Afternoon Magazine 1235. Ed, I think, probably will be doing the weather forecast, and he'll let you know what to expect here for the next couple of days. I'm glad that the caller raised this question, because as I was surfing around before the show looking at websites that had to do with energy efficiency, one of the things that they always say is, in your home appliances, get the most efficiency that you can. And probably the things that use the most energy are those things that either produce heat or cool. So that would be air conditioning, would be your refrigerator. Those would probably be the big ones.
Refrigerator for sure, because it runs 24/7. We don't turn our refrigerator on and off like we do a dishwasher, or it's not a demand-based thing. I mean, it'll run more if you open it. But yeah, that is a one of the better things to go for.
And so let me ask you a question now. I'll promise to get to the calls right here in a second. We were talking about, and we do the same thing at our house. If we can possibly get away with having the AC turned off and the windows open, we will do that. And then we know that we get to a certain point where it gets really humid. It's just really uncomfortable. So then you pretty much got to buckle down and turn the thing off. So let's say you've had an extended period where it's been pretty nice. You had the windows open. And you know that you're heading towards a period of if it's going to be hot and humid. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, when do you close the windows and turn it on? Do you wait until the last possible, until you're suffering maximally and say, okay, I can't stand it anymore? Or do you go, maybe 24 hours before and say, okay, we know we're going to do it in 24 hours. Maybe better to start now.
Yeah.
Otherwise the humidity is just going to build up, and then your air conditioning is going to just have to work that much harder to pump that water out of the house, which you have let in through the windows.
Right. I'll give you the engineer's answer to everything. It depends. A lot of it depends on, for me, I would say it really depends on how well sized your air conditioning is, whether it's room or central is sort of notwithstanding. If some of us, myself included, I had central air put into my house or replaced in my house, and I downsized the size of the air conditioning units, and that's something we should talk about before the end of the hour. If somebody's
so
buying a new air
conditioner, intentionally made it too small.
I made it. I went smaller. I went down a size instead of up a size. When you calculate, the contractor will calculate and said, here's how big you need. But you can't, you can only buy them in discrete sizes. So I said, it looks like you're 3 and 0.2 tons, and so let's get a 4. And generally, you don't. You want to go down. You want to go backwards. And the reason being that air conditioning, unlike heating, you want the unit to run. If you're going to run it, you want it to run longer periods. And for two reasons. One is that the efficiency gets better. They have these rated efficiencies. The newer ones are SEER, S-E-E-R is the number, and the newer ones, the minimum is SEER 13. Just a few years ago, SEER 10 was the best. This is a 30% increase as of January 1st, which is a big improvement. 10, 15 years ago, it was half that. So, it was just, they've really got, the technology has gotten a lot better, and it's a lot, use a lot less energy to cool now than you did 10, 15 years ago. Of course, the electricity costs considerably more now too, so mm-hmm. those things kind of balance. But you want, especially a central air conditioning unit, you want it to run a long period of time, because if you look at a meter and you turn the thing on, it draws there's a high amp draw early on, which you pay for, And then as it runs and reaches a steady state and starts to provide its cooling, the coil starts to get wet because we're usually in our climate when we want to run these things, we're pulling moisture out of the air. And it takes about 10 to 20 minutes before the thing hits its steady state motion spot. And if you oversize the air conditioning system, it's just going to bang on and off and on and off and on and off. And it's never going to really get a good, it's kind of like your car. It's a similar analogy to, you know, driving in town, stop and go driving versus going out on the highway and setting a speed and just staying there. Mm-hmm. So air conditioning is, I mean, you don't want it to run all day, but, mm-hmm. and you want it to do the job so that it does shut off occasionally. And because otherwise you're never going to get the comfort that you're looking for. But you do want them to run a long period of time. And the physics of the way that dehumidification works on the cooling coil inside that thing is that it takes a little while for the humidity to start to work it to be wrung out of the air. And if the thing comes on and off and on and off so much, it doesn't do a very good job dehumidifying. So that said, if you're sizing these things, don't let the contractor tell you, well, bigger's better. Because in a way, you want to go, I mean, you don't want to go half of what they're telling you, but you want to roll it backwards a little bit to the next smaller size as opposed to the next larger size. A lot of contractors know this, and they will actually tell you that as well, the reputable, you know, the more reputable ones or knowledgeable ones. But getting back to your initial question was, you don't want to turn it on 24 hours ahead of time because the conditions in the house at that point are comfortable. And so, you know, you really don't want to run it to do that. And if the humidity hasn't arrived yet, there's not a whole lot for the air conditioning unit to do. So I'd say wait until you're ready. Mm-hmm. And if you know that it takes 2 or 3 hours to get the house down, just use that as your guide and go with that. So no, I wouldn't do a preemptive strike on it.
Okay. That's what I want to know.
Yeah, no. Nah. All right. Turn it on when you need it.
Larry Lister, he's a mechanical engineer. He specializes in energy efficiency and his work in big buildings. Occasionally he's here on the program. We talk about things on the level of the residents of the home. And if you have questions, you can give us a call, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Next up, we'll talk with someone in Belgium over by Danville. Line 4. Hello.
Good morning, sir. Uh-huh. I happen to be in a situation where I do need to put in a new heating system, and I've been getting some estimates on it. And there's a couple questions I'd like to ask about this situation, if I could. I'm in a position where right now the house has forced hot air, but I'm not particularly stuck with staying with that. I'm thinking seriously of going back to hot water heat. And the question is, I was wondering, is that should that be the best way to deal with it? I have no problems with installing all the radiators and all that sort of stuff. That's not a problem. The situation is it more efficient to go with the hot water than it is with the forced air? And then on top of that, one of the people who came to speak to me about putting in a system tried to have me go towards a two-stage heat pump. And with the negotiations going on now to start paying much higher prices for electricity, that just doesn't sound like a good idea to me.
Let me hit the first one as far as hot water versus forced air. When you say you don't have a problem putting in the radiators and so forth, I don't know if you're talking about the cost of that or the fact that you would potentially do it yourself. The cost of switching the type of system you have from forced air to hot water would definitely not be trivial.
No, I know. I've already got some of the prices.
Yeah, and if you're wondering whether you'll get that back over some lifetime in efficiency, I would be worried about it.
Is that right?
I would really be worried about it, yeah. Boilers are efficient. The forced air furnaces, the newer forced air furnaces are quite efficient as well. In fact, the furnace technology, the air technology is slightly more efficient in its conversion efficiency of the unit itself than the boilers, although there are some really, really nice compact, high-efficiency boilers, and it's really almost a wash. But in theory, the forced air ones are the government numbers, which is the standard that we use, shows that those are quite efficient. The delivery of that hot air or hot water is more efficient on the water side than it is on the air side. So you lose a little bit there.
Well, you see, I'm in a situation where I have to re-plumb the house, re-electric the house, and the air ducts for the hot air and where the plane sits is really in a very poor position. It takes up a great big area of my building, so I'd either have to put in new air ducts or put in new water lines. And I thought,
what are you going to do about cooling?
I was going to have that in the ceiling and have it forced air with one of the more ceiling blown down from the roof.
Yeah.
Ceiling, and I thought also about putting a coil in that for the spring and fall if I used hot water, so you don't have to use heat up the entire system. Only use that in the wintertime, and the forced air of that might improve things just a little bit there.
Yeah, I would definitely not do that. If you've got the ability to do the cooling the way you're talking about, that sounds good, and it sounds like you have some other reasons for eliminating the existing ductwork anyway, or if it's going anyway, that makes it a little easier to recommend having hot water heat and then, you know, the cooling, the ceiling
yeah.
mounted cooling. So in that case, I'd want to go that direction myself. I don't know that you're caught. I think that the other issues you're mentioning should probably drive your decision as to what's going to work for your for space and for floor plan, and the comfort from the hot water will be nice.
Yeah.
And the cost won't be very high, but I think that you're not looking at a major difference in forced air versus boiler. I would recommend that you go with like a small modular Peerless boiler or something, because those things are amazing.
Yeah, that's true. And this is a place I hope to die in, so, you know.
Well, not anytime soon, though.
Yeah, we'll hope it'll be a while.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm hoping.
And make sure you vent everything right so you don't speed that up. But.
Yeah. As far as the two-stage electric heat pumps don't seem like an efficient way to deal with our electrical cost today.
Well, they're not. It depends on if you're talking an air cooled or a ground source. The ground source heat pumps are pretty efficient, and it's a pretty nice technology. It's a fairly expensive technology, and we're right on the borderline of whether the location climate wise as to where those work. Down in southern Illinois and you know, Kentucky, Tennessee, they definitely make a lot of sense, and in northern Illinois they really don't make a lot of sense. We're right on this kind of break even line where it's a great technology. It's the equipment is good. It's very efficient. You pay a premium for it, and whether you get that premium back is kind of iffy and depends a lot on the individual and how and what their behavior is. If you're talking about an air-cooled heat pump, and by the way, a heat pump's a unit that does both heating and
yeah.
cooling, and it runs in reverse. It's a refrigeration cycle that runs in reverse to heat. If you're talking about an air-cooled, I would really tend to want to go. I would push you toward the separate, you know, nice high efficiency cooling system and a high efficiency boiler or whatever yeah. else you're looking to do.
Okay, thank you very much.
It depends on your numbers, though. I mean, if you're getting great prices on the heat pump, then maybe that would be the way to go.
Okay, our guest here, Larry Lister. He's a mechanical engineer. He works with a company called Facility Dynamics. Also, before that, spent a number of years with U.S. Army Construction Engineering Research Lab. He's been a consultant to Argonne National Laboratory, to the Department of Energy, to the World Bank, and in his work deals with very large buildings. Here, when he talks with us on Focus 580, we talk about residential issues in home energy. And questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. And up next, someone in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering, how do you determine if a refrigerator is old enough that it simply should be disposed of? I think the one I have is probably about 12 years old.
Yeah, the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy, who has a book that they put out every couple of years or so, and you can get it at all the bookstores, by the way. I think there's a pointer to the on the WILL website
mm-hmm.
As well, under my section of
could
that
okay.
website is. That I would pick up that book and have a look at it. Mine's a little bit old, the one I'm looking at right here. It's 3 or 4 years old. The general rule of thumb on refrigerators, though, is that, and again, I'm I don't like to just toss stuff away just because it happens to be five, six, 7 years old. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of other reasons, behavioral reasons, why you might want a different refrigerator. You may want it something bigger. You may want something that looks nicer. And I still think, you know, we're human beings and all that stuff should factor in. From an energy perspective, anything that is about 10 years old or older, given the advances that have been occurring, anything that's 10 years old or older is definitely a candidate for replacement. And when you're looking at, and generally if it's working right, it would be hard to recommend replacing a 10-year-old refrigerator just because of its energy use. If you're happy with it in every other respect. The caller earlier, 20 years old, yeah, boy, let's get that out of there and you know, do it properly, of course, but get it out of there and get the refrigerant out of there and be on your way. So 10 years is roughly, and at that point I say, whenever, if you're looking at some major repair, really think hard about whether it's worth doing the major repair.
What about freezers?
Freezers, there's the two general types of standing freezers are the upright and the chest type.
This is an upright.
Yeah, the upright are much less efficient than the chest type, mainly they're a lot closer to being equal if you never open them. But the upright, when you open it, you pretty much lose all the cold air that's in there. It just falls out. So it's like having the thing full of water. You open it up, you got water all over the floor. Well, that's what happens to the cold air. It doesn't take a lot to replace that cold air once you close the thing. A chest type, when you open it, the cold air just stays there. And they tend to use a lot less energy. But again, a lot of these upright freezers that are in the 10-year-old range are considerably less efficient. Really depends on how often you use them. A lot of people that have freezers, if you really question them, myself included, I could probably get by without it at this point. You know, a couple of kids have gone. I kind of have a lot less stuff in this freezer nowadays, and I feel like maybe I should just bail on it, you know.
And I suppose the fuller you keep it, the more efficient.
To an extent, you don't want to completely keep it, you know, to the point where it can't circulate, you know, where the air isn't. But yeah, I think in general the fuller you keep it.
But it sounds as though they're both at the point where any repairs would be replacement, and consider it in the future. But how long would it take to make enough of a saving on energy?
Just on energy grounds?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I'd have to research that. I'm thinking somewhere in the 10-year-old refrigerator. My shot from the hip, my engineering guess would be 5 to 8 years.
I see.
There's probably better investments to be made.
So you really need another reason to go along with it, but don't repair it.
If you're 10 years old, yeah, you're not gonna see it in your energy bill. And you know, refrigerators are, while they do cost money, they're not. The big, you know, space conditioning really eats up a lot of your bill, other than in the spring and fall when you're really just looking at the cost of the appliances and things. And most of us aren't doing much heating or cooling. So those few months of the year is when you would see it, but it would get eclipsed in the summer and winter. Not that it wouldn't be there, the savings are there, but.
Well, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. And as Larry said, we do indeed have a few energy information links on our website. If you go to wyll.uiuc.edu, go to Focus 580, and then go to links, there are some. And among them here, there is one for the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy, so that you can just click on that, and I think that will take you there if you're interested in that information on appliances. And we'll continue here talking with people who are listening. We have someone in Champaign. They are next, line number two. Hello.
Hi. I'm interested in learning more about making your attics more efficient. I live in a split-level house. It has a newer roof, but there's no holes, no vents in the soffit. And I'm interested. I'm going to put vents for sure, but I'm interested in knowing if it's worth getting some of those circular turbines that go on top of your house, on top of the roof, and if it's worth adding another gable for circulation.
Do you have an attic? Is there an attic?
Yeah, there's an attic, and it's well insulated now, but it just really gets super hot up there. There's just, I mean, there's only two gables because it's split level. It's not really good circulation.
Yeah. Yeah, I would. I mean, most contractors that, you know, a lot of the reputable contractors around would give you pretty good advice. It gets down to some specifics that would be hard to diagnose here, but the general approach, and I know on Monday, I think when Hank was on, or he covered a lot of this as well, and it was all really good information, is that you do want to ventilate that attic. So you're totally correct in that. The best way to do it is all passive, and it doesn't require fans and electricity and things, is to put a if your house is able to, is to put a ridge vent, which is a continuous vent along the top most part of the house, the straight ridge, and that's something that a contractor would do. Usually you would want to do that when you're re-roofing, but you don't have to. And then putting soffit vents down low that will allow the air to come in. It will pass through the attic and then heat and then go up out the ridge vent. So that would be the preferred. I would think that would be the preferred way to go. I think Hank would agree with that. I know that, you know, the Small Homes Council people have done a lot of work. Bill Rose is another one who's really well versed in a lot of this stuff. And so and he's on.
He's on occasionally.
He's on occasionally
as well. Bill has been here, and I'm not sure if they do have a website. You could always check and see what kind of information might be available on the Small Homes Council website.
What about those turbines that some people put on their houses? Are those worth the extra effort?
Generally not, especially if you don't have anywhere for air to come in to make it up, but. There's you talking about the turbines that just sort of spin in the wind.
Yeah.
Yeah, they only spin when there's wind.
Okay.
And you know, they will. You can. It's better than not doing anything. But the more effective and elegant solution is the ridge vent, and then giving yourself plenty of soffit.
Great. Thank you very much.
Ventilation as well.
Thank you. So if you have the recommended amount of insulation in your attic, so that's a barrier between the top living space and the attic space if it's not occupied.
Correct.
Then, though, does attic ventilation really matter? If you've got a barrier between, even if the attic is really hot, if you've got a barrier between that and the second floor in a two-story house, does attic ventilation really make that much difference?
Well, theoretically, if the barrier was perfect, then no, it wouldn't, because you would have no heat exchange in the summer, at least with the hot attic and the ceiling. Yeah. The barriers are never perfect. They're usually far from it. And so you do have some insurance there, some better than others. But there's leakage. There's things that occur between the attic and the house. And also for reasons of just longevity of the roof, the sheathing, and some of that, you really just don't want that sitting there at 170 degrees all day long on a hot summer day.
I suppose if moisture builds up in there, you don't want that either.
Oh, yeah, and they got into that one Monday, didn't they? There was a lot of discussion of moisture and things. So, yeah, and then that's also an issue, is that, you know, if that's a case, you want that. You want to give that all somewhere to go.
All right. Let's go to Urbana, line 3. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I had a question for you about window AC units in apartments. We're going to be moving into a two-bedroom apartment about average size, and there's a hookup in the living room for either a 110 voltage AC or a 220, which is kind of nice that they have both. But I was just wondering what you could recommend as far as how big should I go? I do want it to reach back there in the bedrooms.
Yeah, so you have one location, and you're trying to do the whole apartment.
Yeah.
Is it a deeper apart? Is it kind of a long, narrow space that you're going to be
trying
to do?
And I was expecting to put up some sort of fan to blow some of the cold air back in the bedroom.
Yeah, and that's probably not a bad idea. Whether you get 120 or 220, there's no real energy benefit to either one.
Okay.
It really just depends on finding the unit you want and the fact that you don't have to worry about restricting yourself to a 120-volt unit. Generally, the reason for the 220 is that the larger units are going to push more toward being set up for 220 and the smaller units for 120. If you're really wanting to cool, is it in the middle of the building by chance? Do you have people on all sides or?
No, it's on the corner, top on the floor.
Yeah, so top corner. Oh, good. Get something big. No, I'm thinking something in the 18,000
BTU.
Yeah, that's a ton and a half in the cooling parlance. I don't know how large. I haven't shot for window units in years. I don't know how large you can go. If you could get a 2-ton, that might work also. The problem is that to get a unit that's big enough to do the whole apartment, you could be short cycling, which I talked about earlier, because you could overcool the room that it's connected to. And if you can't get that cooling distributed throughout the house very well, and it's not going to be really easy to do that, the thing could be, even though the apartment might need 2 tons or 20,000 or 24,000 BTU, it may be just that the physics of the whole situation is you're pinching yourself, and that the 18,000 would be better. And not having seen it, you know, even 18 might be large. I would kind of look in that range.
Okay.
And as long as you're not trying to cool your house down within 5 minutes, as long as you're patient.
Yeah.
The again, like the smaller is going to be better. Do you pay for the electricity, or does the landlord?
No, I pay the electricity. I was going to ask you though, should I consider getting like a small 5,000 BTU AC unit for one of the bedrooms on the other side of the apartment, or is that overkill?
No, that might, you might, if you have that option and you've got windows to do that, you could do a small one for the bedroom, which, and it might be that depending on how you like to live, you might just cool in the evening when you want to go to bed,
right,
and not do the rest of the apartment, at least on those shoulder days. In that case, you could go down into the 12,000 range for the major part of the house, and you could downsize that one.
Okay.
I mean, I would think in general, 18,000 for roughly eight. And boy, this is just taking such a shot in the dark. 18,000 ish for the entire premise should be pretty good. If you can break that up into a couple units, if it is a long kind of broken up apartment, that might be your better bet.
Okay, thank you, sir.
All right, thank you. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of the show with engineer Larry Lister. He's a mechanical engineer, works for a company called Facility Dynamics, and every once in a while he's here on the program, and we talk about energy efficiency around the home. If you have questions, give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I think probably when you've done here and to do this in the past, we've talked a little bit about ceiling fans. The fact that air, one of the things that determines whether we feel comfortable or not is air movement.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also different depending on what time of the year, you know, whether you want to be warm or you want to be cool. Ceiling fans, is that something that actually people might consider as a reasonable investment in comfort?
Absolutely, yeah. If you're mechanically cool, well, no matter what, but especially if you're mechanically cooling, ceiling fans, the whole idea of the fan, by the way, is just, you know, is which we all know, is that you want to move air over your body. It creates a cooling sensation because it's evaporating, perspiration from your body, and that's one of our ways of cooling down. So moving air definitely gives us a feeling of cooling. Generally, the research people that have looked into this find that most people can cheat their thermostat about 2 to 3 degrees warmer if they're moving air versus if somebody says degree, pump it to moving air equally. So said with floor fan or anything that circulates, I often see that fans do not house. They in fact heat the house. If you look closely, a fan uses electricity, and that electricity essentially into heat. So when you're cooling, when you're doing mechanical cooling in a house, don't have a bunch of lights burning, because it's just that much more load that the air conditioner has to undo. So don't leave lights on unnecessarily when you're trying to cool. Same thing with fans. If you're not in a room, a fan is doing nothing but heating the room. I mean, it's heating the room even when you're standing there, but the comfort benefit so far outweighs what relatively little it's heating the room that it's worth doing. But when you leave a room or you leave the house, don't turn all the fans on to try to cool the house down. it's amazing that a lot of folks don't understand that. You know, and I've actually heard people say, well, I'm going to turn all the fans on so that cools the house down. You should turn them off. Yeah. So it's something that only works when you're feeling it. As soon as you're not feeling it anymore, it shouldn't be running.
And in the summertime, what you want to do is if you have these ceiling fans, you want to have it set. So I think we've had this discussion before.
Yeah.
So it pulls the air up. Is that right? No, it's supposed to go the other way.
Yeah, there's the two settings the two settings on the ceiling fan is that there's an upflow and a downflow.
Right.
And or at least on most ceiling fans, when you're cooling in the cooling season, you want the downflow because that's what's going to create the sensation on your body. And that's what you want when you're trying to stay cool, you want a fan to be blowing on your body, so you want it blowing down at your body and moving the air.
Okay.
When it's in the upflow position, and they both circulate, so it's a little bit of a theoretical question, but when in the winter you want the fan to blow upward because you don't want the feeling of cool. You don't want the cooling sensation of the fan blowing on your body. You just want to distribute the heat up near the ceiling and get it back down to the floor. So when you're on the what I'll call the suck side of the fan, as opposed to the blow side of the fan, when you're on the suck side of the fan and it's blowing upward, you don't really feel much air movement at all because it's all dissipated around the room. The ceiling feels it, but your body doesn't on the floor. In the summer, you want to flip it so that you're getting the blow side of the fan on you, which is kind of what... So that's the way that the easiest way to remember it is that in the summer, I want to feel the air and I want to be right underneath it, and that would be the way to do it.
All right. One other thing I said at the beginning, I was looking at sites about energy efficiency. One of the things that they talked about a little bit of it was your appliances, get the most efficient you can. The other thing that they come right away is air infiltration. You want to keep in this particular case, what we're trying to do is keep the hotter and the humidity outside.
Right.
And already we had a question from somebody about windows. We said, well, really, windows aren't going to do, unless your windows are so old and so bad, putting in a new window, as far as your energy goes, is maybe not going to make much difference, assuming that the rough opening around the big hole they put in your wall to put the window in is sealed around.
Yeah, that's a big one.
But then if you're going to go around looking for potential places where you may be having major air infiltration,
mm-hmm.
What are the big places that you would say concentrate on this kind of place first?
Yeah, the big place is the band joist around where the house meets the foundation. Especially in older houses, that's always a really leaky area, and there's all kinds of different details of ways that they build houses. But a lot of times, there's a lot of leakage that occurs down in that part of the house. Likewise, up where the living space meets the attic or meets the outdoors, there's all these penetrations for vent stacks and for attic access and all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. That also because the hot air rises and then it's looking for somewhere to go up there. Infiltration is, and it's big year round, and you want to do everything you can. We always harp about that, especially in the winter. The point about you made a great point about the windows. That's one of my own personal preferences is to watch what you do with windows as far as looking for big, big, big money energy savings, because a lot of people don't find it. And the reason being that a lot of the leakage in your house is where you can't see it. It's behind the walls. And there's a lot of penetration sites, for example, very often where a porch roof meets the house. Porch roof is obviously usually not that well built because it's outside and as far as air infiltration, you don't care. However, once air gets in between that roof area, a lot of times if you look at where it attaches to the house, in a lot of cases, it's wide open to the wall, to the interior wall of the house.
Yeah.
And there's leakage paths there. A lot of times we'll find that the temperature between the first and second floor of an older house is often real close to the outside air temperature, because of these leakage, these leaks and things that occur. Insulation's great, but it's not an it's not a pressure barrier. Insulation is there that if there's no air moving in the insulation, it works pretty well. But once you violate the pressure boundary portion of insulating, which not a lot of people pay as much attention to, there's air moving through that insulation, and it quickly degrades how well that insulation works. I mean, insulation really is predicated, its effectiveness is predicated on the fact that it's trapping air, not allowing air to move. If you got air blowing through it, it really becomes a filter,
yeah.
as opposed to insulation. The last issue on that is that in the summer, infiltration is not quite as big a player in the cost of cooling as it is in the cost of heating, only because infiltration is driven by temperature difference. So in the winter, when you're trying to keep it, 70 degrees inside and it's 10 degrees outside, there's a 60 degree temperature difference driving infiltration. In the summer, when it's, we're trying to keep it 70 and it's 90 outside, or 75 and it's 90 outside, the temperature difference is a lot lower. And infiltration is not physically as big a player in the summer as it is in the winter. Still good to go after it because the winter is, very costly, and we'll be harping on that in 6 months from now.
Yeah.
But that's, the infiltration is often not the first. That's why I didn't start talking about it when we started talking about cooling, as I always do when we talk about heating.
Yeah. We got a couple of minutes left here. Again, somebody wants to call real quick, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Anything else in general that you'd like to mention?
I think the one thing I did want to talk about was that if you are mechanically cooling, and a lot of us are, once the humidity gets up there and closing the house off, really watch how many lights and things you have burning. I know, like with kids at home, I'm constantly running around shutting lights off all day long. I'm trying to cool the house down right now because I've got my air conditioning on, and also things like the dishwasher. If you really want to be comfortable at 4 in the afternoon, run the dishwasher when you go to bed, or run it first thing in the morning or something. But that adds heat and humidity to the house. And, just the appliances, there's things you can do to really mitigate. I always try to say mitigate the need to heat, mitigate the need to cool to the extent you can prior to, throwing BTU and kilowatt hours.
Yeah,
at the
I guess I wouldn't have thought about that. Maybe the same thing applies to doing laundry.
Yeah,
I suppose. Yeah, definitely. Anything that you're going to do in the house that's going to make heat, you probably want to save that for the time of the day when it's going to be the coolest, whatever you can get. And I guess that would be at night.
Yeah. The other issue that I always like to bring up is the whole house fan, which is one of my favorite things. And especially if you're building a new house and, very few people consider doing it. All they want to do is just throw in as much cooling as they can. But the idea of the whole house fan, you can design a house so that it can take it. Some houses can be retrofit with it. Others can't. But the idea of a fan that can evacuate, that can pull outside air in through open windows when the conditions are right for it, really makes a difference. So many people have homes that you open the windows, and often it's cool outside, it's hot inside, we get a nice cold front comes in, everybody wants to just open up, and it takes a day and a half for the house to start to actually feel cool because of airflow through the house or shrubs around the house, whatever keeps the air from flowing through the house. You can open the windows, but sometimes you can't make it happen. A whole house fan allows you to just turn this fan on at night and cool the house down quite a bit, and then turn it off during the day and close up.
Okay, and I suppose that also gets at some of the concerns people have. If we got houses built really tight, you do want to have air exchange. You want to be bringing fresh air from the outside at a certain amount.
Right.
You don't want stuff built. We talked about office buildings being really tight. You don't want that.
Yeah, and some houses have gotten to the point of being that way. I think now they're designing around that a little more. But for a while there, we were going after energy efficiency to the point of making some pretty nasty indoor air conditions. I think that by and large has gone away, and they're still not making houses all that tight anyway. So yeah. I think you usually get plenty of ventilation.
Well, I think we got to go. I'm sorry. Now I invited a call, and we're not going to have time to take it. My apologies, but maybe on another day, Larry will come back. And in the meanwhile, Hank should be on again next month. And if you want to go back and listen to Monday's show of Hank's Beast, that should be on our website too. So
yeah, there's a lot of good stuff on. By the way, RLA is rated load amps. Right. I think that came up during Hank's thing as well. If you want to look at the amperage on your air conditioner, it'll be under RLA.
All right. Well, thanks very much for being here. Larry Lister. He's a mechanical engineer with the company of Facility Dynamics. And every once in a while, he's here with us, and we talk a little bit about energy efficiency around the home.